and you're about to hear Bob's Black Tom Funhouse. It parodies satire and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the church of subgenus, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
You are listening to Bob's Slacktime Fun House.
The Lymph Node Edition. Quality rises to the top.
Yeah, that's the way life works.
Indeed. All of life.
In fact, if you become like the most powerful person in the nation in which you live, if you rise to the top of the populace from which you've risen, then someone could stab you in the back. It could happen. It's a power
thing. Some people could stab you in the back.
Well, yeah, you could be stabbed with multiple knives by multiple people, but if there's one knife, there could be other people behind them, the planning of the thing, but probably just one guy gets close enough to do it, or girl.
Nowadays. But yeah. See, back in the day, they liked to make sure that everyone got their hands dirty so no one would wimp out on them.
When Brutus stabbed Caesar on the Ides of March, you saying there were other folks stabbing him at the same time?
Brutus was the last one to stab him. He didn't want to do it, and they were like, come on, dude, you're in. You got to get your blood on your hands, too. So he, and that's why he said, and you, Brutus?
Dude, I've been standing right here the whole time you were getting shanked. A shank spear.
But it's sort of the middle of March.
Computer on. Bob's Slacktime Funhouse.
Loading.
Suck on that, Atlanta.
Long and hard. Run your tongue around it, but no teeth. So you do it like I tell you, you ain't gonna get your crack rock, Atlanta.
Yeah. Which is the sequel to Milton Bradley's Candyland.
Once you're trained to live a life for nothing but pleasure.
Nicholas wasn't on anything, I was certain of that. And if I do get to sleep, Nicholas said shakily, I have dreadful nightmares. He told me one of them.
In the dream, he was shut in a tiny cage under the Colosseum in ancient Rome. In the sky overhead, huge winged lizards were searching for him. All at once, the flying lizards detected his presence under the Colosseum. They swept down and, in an instant, were tearing open the door of his cage. Trapped with death at hand, all Nicholas could do was hiss at the lizards. Evidently, he was a small mammal of some kind.
Once more, the impression had begun to come over me by slow degrees that I was in Rome, not in Orange County, California. I sensed the Empire without seeing it, sensed a vast iron prison in which human slaves toiled. I saw, as if superimposed on the black metal walls of this huge prison, certain rapidly scurrying creatures in gray robes, enemies of the Empire and its tyranny, a remnant opposed to it. And I knew from a deep internal clock down within my own self that the true time was AD 70, that the Savior had come and gone but would soon return. The gray-robed, hurrying remnant, with a feeling of joy, awaited and prepared for his return. I was in deadly danger from the spies of Rome. The Roman agents would kill me in an instant. It was Empire policy. It was an ancient fight I was in, not a new one. It had been fought without cease for 2,000 years. Names had changed, faces had changed, and the adversaries remained a permanent constant. The slave empire against those who struggled for justice and truth, not freedom exactly in the modern sense, but for virtues obscured today, buried under the bulk of an empire that embraced both the United States and the Soviet Union as twin, equal manifestations. The U.S. and the USSR, I understood, were the two portions of the empire as divided up by the Emperor Diocletian for purely administrative purposes. At heart, it was a single entity with a single value system, and its value system was the concept of the supremacy of the state. The individual counted in its scales as nothing, and individuals who turned against the state and generated their own values were the enemy. We were the enemy. We who wore the gray robes and waited with eager anticipation for our king to return. Would we be able to survive against the Romans by stealth, since we had no worldly power until he returned? Or would he return to find us gone, or worse, assimilated into the customs of the Empire, our own memory of what we actually were lost forever, or perhaps lost until, by his return, he could restore such memories, reawaken in sleeping men a forgotten knowledge of who they were? Rome was here now. It had invaded the landscape, rising up from within it, manifesting itself from its centuries-long place of inner concealment. Rather than me being back in the ancient world, Rome had revealed itself as the underlying reality of our present-day world. Hidden still from the eyes of other Americans, it was nonetheless blatantly visible to me. The empire had never died. It had only receded out of sight.
But the reason Caesar got the knife is that for the first time, essentially, he had won, an emperor had won the hearts of the common people.
Oops.
Because he realized that when his troops came back and went back to their lives, they'd become these poor people. And the people loved him for it. He was about to declare himself emperor for life.
Wow.
So they decided to stab him instead.
For the good of the country.
Oh, of course. It wasn't for any personal gain.
So it probably takes a lot of balls for senators to get together and decide to kill their appointed leader.
At risk of their lives, yes. Yeah. The Senate would have been essentially irrelevant, and they would have lost their power.
And an irrelevant never forgets.
Good evening, plebes. Tonight we turn a jaundiced eye to the slow tide of empires lapping at our ankles. But before we make a break for the no doubt dubious conclusions he has written down on these cards for me to read, a quick word of explanation. What am I talking about? No one's going to get crucified. These are good times. But when that inevitable dopamine cascade becomes a cataract and all of the unpleasant questions start percolating to the top of the swamp, please refer back to this lecture for reference. To that end, the best model I can read off of this 3x5 card stapled to my thumb is the old consensus reality shift, which no doubt will not console you. In short, if a doorway appears in a spot where there was no door previously, then do not go in. How easy is that? If the door did not previously exist, then it is not likely to lead to any place you need to go anyway. But I know, the questions start dancing, the inhalers are plentiful, and that simian thumb gets a twitching. And if you get enough monkeys with enough twitching thumbs, then things start to happen. So, with this operator-style view of Homo sap and voluntary organization, was civilization inevitable? Although we would like to think so, clearing our ledgers of an eternity of late ease, the answer is probably not. Had our ancestors been more vigilant, perhaps it could have been avoided altogether. Therefore, we are here now, paying for it with exponential interest. And paying for what amounts to the same product, an empirical empire comprised of institutions, no, not the good kind, designed only for self-preservation, populated by honorable men capable of only self-preservation. At the risk of inducing total catatonia, as opposed to the highly suggestible state of soporific boredom that we usually provoke, and yes, being somewhat of a ghoul, rather than dwell on the alleged positive and productive aspects of empire, let me skip ahead to the inevitable collapse. You know, the good part. So, you want to annihilate your empire. Well, the first thing you need is size. You need to inflate that baby until light shows through it. Spread it as far as you can by force or coercion. Now, you not only have more wealth than you can imagine, but more enemies than you can count. And you will be dropping a good deal of that wealth into your far-flung, overburdened military. Now is about the time you will find that the price of imperialism is diversity. There is no way around this unless your mission is to kill the rest of the world. And although this fabulous era has made impressive leaps and bounds towards this very end, it is still a major pain in the ass and would cause a serious imbalance in the global supply and demand equation. The diversity inevitably leads towards original thought. Please note the difference between heading somewhere and arriving there. Regardless, here's where the bricks start falling out of the structure. Because, since you have built your empire on, well, imperialism, you have utilized a lot of cheap physical labor. Once those funny new ideas from the other side of the world start to wind their way through the population, not only does the rabble get miffed, but your moneyed classes start to develop a conscience. After this is only endgame. Soon it's all, I'm the Unabomber. No, I'm the Unabomber. Ah, yes, inspiring stuff. But in all fairness, let us not forget those thousands of would-be revolutionaries who were crucified or used as tiki torches at Imperial Garden parties. Yes, we are a morbid people, aren't we? We want to know, to see, to revel in the details of our suffering. We like equations and graphs that illustrate our common knowledge with digital clarity. So, to the question then, what is it? You have countless enemies and a nation of pissed-off plebes, and still you grind on. Where's the big finish? The fire and the sacking and the only following orders? Well, this explanation compresses nicely, and I think on some level you already know the answer. 509 years before the invasion, the Roman monarchy was overthrown and a republic was fashioned in its place. They have their ups and downs, expansions, contractions, until we reach a point 380 years after the invention. Let's not overlook this achievement. Let's give respect where it is due. This is close to a 900-year run. That is a hell of a showing, even by Chinese standards. A hell of a run, that is, until 380 years after the invention, not too shortly after a period of tasty persecution, the optimistically dubbed Theodosius I declared Christianity to be the official religion of the Roman Empire. By 400, 5 years after Dumbass was too dead to care, it was already out of control, with the original infection mutating into specialized breeds, priest, bishop, patriarch, with dominion reaching from the dingy farm to the fetid metropolis. By 410, the Visigoths and their Hun buddies are listening to Bauhaus in the Colosseum. Coincidence? Don't believe in them. While it is true that the empire had been in decline for about 200 years prior to this act of theocratic suicide, and the remnants of the empire did thrash around in its feces-soaked night smock for another century or so before the Lombards mercifully put a pillow over its head, this point does seem to mark the final descent into what we now call the Dark Ages. I'm telling you, this stuff is like social cancer. Yes, Theodosius the Last was one fool too many. But if not him, then some other inbred son of a former emperor would have done it. And before you clutch at the shiny balloon of their impressive winning streak, please remember that the time frames are moving a bit faster these days. The real lesson of the Roman Empire is one that I refuse to learn, thank you very much. No more Dark Ages. The collapse was followed by a millennium of religious rule under the auspices of the Byzantines and the Holy Roman Empire, which foolishly thought that Jehovah would allow them to squeeze the ruling class forever and ever. Amen. And as much as I hate to say it, the subs seem to fare a lot better when the pink boys are at the old orgy porgy. It's when they get spooked and start picking out members of the pack to sacrifice that we run into the worst of our problems, historically speaking, that is. But fear not. Just because our own personal rides on this particular Empire Express may be winding down does not mean that we are headed back to the caves to war with these lowbreds again. There is always a wild card, always someone or something willing to grab the wheel. In my narcotic optimism, I look to the return of our former spare parts treasure trove, the Russian space station. But, more specifically, the unusually aggressive fungi that have colonized every spare cranny of the Wormwood Mirror. Tough little bastards that give off corrosive agents like acetic acid and steal sleep from uncertain microbiologists. So, until we speak again, das vidanya. The saprophyte is dead. Long live the truffle.
Great Caesar's ghost is an epithet, just like Huff.
Except Huff, I think, carries a lot more weight than Great Caesar's ghost. I don't.
Well, different times. Here, let's check the Wayback Machine. I think that I mentioned this as a Perry White reference.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
An old Superman episode.
Dial it up.
Here we go.
Inferior and possibly opposite earphone past.
Great Caesar's ghost. Perry White on Superman on the old TV show used to say, "Great Caesar's ghost." And there was actually an episode. I remember this clearly.
Yes.
He was on an airplane, and somebody was messing with old Perry White's head.
And Caesar's ghost.
And Caesar's ghost kept appearing.
Up.
The apparition,
yes,
of Caesar's ghost.
That's
The Holy Ghost is all like goodness and light. It's like Glinda the Good Witch.
Yeah, that's what they tell you to get in your pants.
Yeah, I mean, anything from the other world, anything supernatural, you shouldn't really trust it, because you are a being with a commodity to another entity from a trans-dimensional bullshit thing.
And essentially no way to defend that commodity.
We'll be right back.
Let's go back in time again and say something else from the other Ides shows.
Yes, let's. Preferably a bunch of shit all mixed together.
Space stations and perhaps the
good evening. This is 91.1 FM.
R.E.K. Atlanta.
The most student voice of the Georgia Institute of Technology.
This is Spartacus.
I am Spartacus.
We're only doing this.
And tonight, we're going to talk to you.
We did.
About
But why?
I know this is late, but I
or if you could also write to the Texas Central,
So let's harken back to the days of ancient Rome. We will be playing material for you.
Created in 1957 as the result of a unique collaboration between NBC and conservative think tank General Consensus Incorporated, Caliper Coggins is truly a marvel of telegenetics. The product of the most sophisticated television equipment of the day and of DNA once thought to be that of Marshall McLuhan, but later believed to be that of a prospector in 1820s California, Caliper Coggins has been retained as a consultant to some of the most powerful, powerful corporations in the world. A former head of the FBI and two-time Emmy Award nominee, Caliper Coggins pans for gold and has a core temperature of 16 degrees Celsius. And Caliper Coggins makes its own gravy and stops on a dime. Caliper Coggins loves to stay outdoors. Caliper Coggins cleans your toilet. Caliper Coggins loves the way you touch him. Caliper Coggins is a real champ. You are vulnerable and afraid, and Caliper Coggins knows it.
You know, I like them old boys. But they do ramble on. Seems they doth protest too much. I'm starting to sound just like them. But seems to me, what the world needs now is a refresher course in American history. People got no grounding in the basics. Especially this new generation. Lazy cowpokes. Why, I got more tolerance for the WB network. Seems everyone's operating under the assumption that this Rome was a real piece of work. Well, I'm here to tell you it won it. Well, it was real pretty, but hell, we all knew it was gonna crash sooner or later. Now, I'll be the first to say we ain't got everything all hunky-dory over here. Thursdays, for instance, just ain't been the same for me since that Michael J. Keaton left Spin City. Now, he's one class act. But back to my point. Seems to me that this nation has some real self-esteem issues. Instead of acting proud like a big bully in the neighborhood, sitting on your chest, dangling a snot over your face, we've been behaving like a little girl with an eating disorder. And I tell you, it's a crying shame. Confidence. That's what we need, dry and secure. Why, that lack of confidence goes back to the beginnings of this country. Why, did you know that old fella Thomas Jefferson said that democracy has a lifespan of only 200 years? Now, ain't that some kind of self-defeatist attitude? But looky here. He give us that timeline of 200 years, and well, some real red-blooded Americans, they take that time, and with a whole lot of hard work and some well-choreographed events, we cut that time down near in half. Hoo-hoo-wee! I tell you, I'm saying America, hoo-wee! America means business, multinational business. So you ask yourself, what has Rome done for me lately? And you come up kind of empty. Now you ask yourself, what has America done for me lately? Well, how about over 750 premium deluxe channels of entertainment? 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, including all major holidays, both religious and otherwise. And that's the point, ain't it? The Colosseum, them lions and fighting, it was a good start, but those fellas in charge over there didn't see no need to refine their methods of diversion. Maybe if they had, they'd still be running things. Maybe they underestimated the power of a syndicated situation comedy. Well, I appreciate you letting me go on. I get so worked up. You know, some scurried sumbitch jumped my claim whilst I was a contestant on that Who Wants to Be $1 Million? If I catch that scallywag, I'm gonna see to it that his head saddles up real cozy like with his colon. That there's the Caliper Coggins way. My way or the highway to heaven's on. Now don't you go jumping my claim or I'll eat your face off.
Hail Thither. There's lots of fake dudes saying Hail Thither.
Yes.
Because it's funny to lisp Thither.
We had a terrible accident one Ides of March at the Institute.
Yeah, when we killed Batarud?
No.
Oh, I thought that's what happened.
No. Maybe you killed him.
I don't know.
We never actually, I believe we pinned it on the Amish.
Yeah, he fell off a wagon.
Uh-huh.
Funny that.
Well, he was copping a feel off Mary Sue Butterbottom Cup. Something like that.
Butterbottom Cup.
This was years ago.
I don't think those would sell.
Great Caesar's ghost.
So I'm Caesar. Hail
I mean,
me.
Sweet words.
These that Caesar coachings and these lowly courtesies might in turn turn the be not crooked curtsies, preordinance and first decree spaniel into the law which melteth children, that
flaxipating
that will be fond to think blood of ordinary men,
preglaborated,
bears such rebel quality blood, thawed from the true with low fools,
plum swatch,
base,
lib nibbling,
blood fawning. I spurn thee like a cur out of my way. No, Caesar doth not wrong. Not without cause will he be satisfied. What, Brutus?
I kiss thy hand, but not in flattery, Caesar. Desiring thee that Publius Cimber may have an immediate freedom of repeal.
What, Brutus?
Pardon, Caesar. Caesar, pardon. As low as to thy foot doth Cassius fall to beg enfranchisement for Publius Cimber.
I could be well Chunk moved clock. If I were as you. If I could pray Black to move, livery. Prayers would move me. But I am constant
all
as
doth
the northern
place.
Star. Of those true fixed and resting quality, Black there is no fellow in the firmament. The skies
Sir
are painted with unnumbered sparks. They are all fire, and every one doth shine. But one in all
Jubaloo.
Doth hold his place. So
quality.
In the world, 'tis
but
furnished I, well with men,
me.
And men are flesh and blood and apprehensive,
move.
Yet in the number I do know but one that unassailable holds
one.
On his rank, unshaked of motion, and there I am he. Let
Ms.
me a
Jimmy.
Little show it, even in this, that I was constant, Cimber should be banished, and constant do remain to keep him so.
Et tu, Brute? Then fall Caesar.
Colleagues, if you are receiving this communique, I am probably quite dead. But, just in case, pinch my herm girdle and see if it goes rosy. Otherwise, this is the late Dr. Batarudin, now sole property of the Lymph Node Institute's Mulch Squad. Before I slip into my great repose, I must unburden myself of some of the more frustled elements of my experiences with my fellow doctors. Spill my guts, as it were. Snur. Dr. Derail, I hate you most. Perhaps I should say, hey, Ted, but my rage at you does not stop upon my death. I could fill lexicons with tales of your dastardly perversions, but let's leave it at this. I know about your monkey babies, you thick-knobbed noober. Ha, ha, ha. Enough mirth. I am dead, and I must be avenged. But that's hardly my problem now. I will haunt the hallowed halls of your hirsute habitat for hacknattlery, the Institute itself. When you are dragging hobo parts down the sub-corridors at 3 a.m., I'll be there. When you are trying to jimmy open the medicine locker, I'll be there. When you are manning the spy hole at the nurse's showers, I'll be there. I'll be there a lot. I suppose there are some advantages to being dead. How did you do it, I wonder? I have little doubt that my passing is due to some deliberate malfeasance. Was it my transdimensional tantric exploration that did me in? Did I take a crowbar to the back of the head? Was it made to look like a suicide? with a body supersaturated with barbiturates and a shotgun blast to the head for good measure? Perhaps Ebola, or any other gift from LNI Africa. Perhaps I fell off the back of the hay wagon as I groped Mary Sue. Perhaps I fell down a broken escalator late at night. Perhaps a great white shark found its way into my whirlpool. Or perhaps I was smeared with bacon grease and fed to the hobos behind the grassy knoll. Perhaps God blah blah blah.
So what they can get off of serial feasting, whatever killings like that.
Well, that's better for the good life stage of us.
You are listening to 91.1 FM, WRBK.
Range of position.
Maybe he just came out of the box like I'm trying to see.
He didn't use
BRK as a voice, but I saw it usually when he
moved. Do we have to do anything about this?
Very sensitive evidence is wrong.
See any of this?
Such a weird state that I can't be honest.
Good thing.
I'm not sure he ever knew the man.
He always fell at least at in and out.
Strange or dead.
It's too late to ask him.
He wore a tie.
So the recording that we're on, we came on to
anyway.
That was done.
We have to notify next week.
That was his final words.
Which just happened to be hard to deal with. I've never seen a man's head cracked open. He's a glorious, wonderful individual.
His
eye
is
pretty generous.
Great shirt
covered in hay.
Oh, you know,
he's dead. This isn't a battle room show.
It's true.
So,
who
do you think
the murder was?
Is he available?
He was murdered.
And so you should
talk about monkeys licking their teeth.
We shouldn't even think in terms of assassination.
Info, please. As far as Caesar knew, the Ides were just another day. The soothsayer's warning to Julius Caesar, beware the Ides of Mars, has forever imbued that date with a sense of foreboding. But in Roman times, the expression Ides of March did not necessarily evoke a dark mood. It was simply the standard way of saying March 15. Surely such a fanciful expression must signify something more than merely another day of the year. Not so. Even in Shakespeare's times, 16 centuries later, audiences attending his play Julius Caesar wouldn't have blinked twice upon hearing the date called the Ides. The term Ides comes from the earliest Roman calendar, which is said to have been devised by Romulus, the mythical founder of Rome. Whether it was Romulus or not, the inventor of this calendar had a penchant for complexity. The Roman calendar organized its months around 3 days, each of which served as a reference point for counting the other days. Calends, the first day of the month, Nones, the 7th in March, May, July, October, and the 5th in the other month, and the Ides, aforementioned. The remaining days, unnamed, were identified by counting backwards from the calends, known as MVIs. That's all. Go to infopolice.com for more circus.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, Mendiariers, I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is oft interred with their bones. So let it be with Caesar. The noble Brutus hath told me Caesar was ambitious. If it were so, it was a grievous fault. And grievously hath Caesar answered it. Here, under leave of Brutus and the rest, for Brutus is an honorable man, so are they all honorable men, come I to speak in Caesar's funeral. He was my friend, faithful and just to me, but Brutus says he was ambitious. and Brutus is an honorable man. He hath brought many captives home to Rome. Did this in Caesar seem ambitious? When that the poor have cried, Caesar hath wept. Ambition should be made of sterner stuff. Yet Brutus says he was ambitious, and Brutus is an honorable man. What cause withholds you then to mourn for him? O judgment, thou art fled to brutish beasts, and men have lost their reason. Bear with me. My heart is in the coffin there with Caesar, and I must pause till it come back to me. But yesterday the word of Caesar might have stood against the world. Now lies he here, and none so poor to do him reverence. O masters, if I were disposed to stir your hearts and minds to mutiny and rage, I should do Brutus wrong and Cassius wrong, who, you all know, are honorable men. I will not do them wrong. I rather choose to wrong the dead to wrong myself and you. But here's a parchment with the seal of Caesar. I found it in his closet. 'Tis his will. Let but the commons hear his testament, which, pardon me, I do not mean to read. And they would go and kiss dead Caesar's wounds, and dip their napkins in his sacred blood. Yea, beg a hair of him for a memory, and dying, mention it within their wills, bequeathing it as a rich legacy unto their issue. None that I know will be, much that I fear may chance. Good morrow to you. Here the street is narrow, the throng that follows Caesar at the heels, of senators, of praetors, common suitors will crowd a feeble man almost to death. I'll get me to a place more void, and there speak to great Caesar as he comes along.
So anyway, the reason we're doing an Ides of March show is that,
it's March 15th as we record this.
Yes, and you know how we do with the whole Tecumseh thing, and if you don't, then you're about to find out. President Bush. I'm not saying he's going to die in April. All I'm saying is that the trend is that, if following in the pattern of FDR and Lincoln, he is going to die in April. However, this man has broken some streaks that have held up for a long time. There's a football streak where the Washington Redskins, the last home game they play before the election, when the Washington Redskins football team, when they win, the incumbent president or the incumbent party wins, like when Bush took over for Reagan.
Redskins won. And that didn't happen this time.
Redskins lost, and he won. Boston Red Sox have broken their curse. There is an eclipse on the fourth night of the World Series. There's an eclipse due up in April also.
And the Holy Ghost will come down and anoint his brow.
I'm afraid he will. See, I don't want him to die. I want him to serve his term out. Because if he dies, our kids really will be going to George Bush High School. That won't be a John Stewart joke. That'll be the reality.
I'm more concerned about Dick Cheney being in charge. Like, literally. Not just literally. I hear nothing.
Oh.
Last time I told you about the curse of Tecumseh, I may have left a few things out. In 1811, future President William Henry Harrison, then governor of Indiana, led an attack against the Native Americans known as the Battle of Tippecanoe. The battle, a victory that broke the back of Tecumseh's Confederation of Tribes, fatally wounded the united Native American resistance against white colonization. A momentous achievement indeed. A year later, Tecumseh desperately threw in with the British in the War of 1812. As is their way, the British army fled the Battle of the Thames, and Tecumseh was killed. It wasn't until Harrison became president and died in office, though, that the whispers of a curse began.
President Harrison was the first president to die in office, contracting pneumonia secondary to the Indian curse. A fluke took a step towards becoming a trend with Abraham Lincoln, who was elected in 1860 and then re-elected in 1864, but not for long. A Catholic cabal struck him down on April 14th of 1865. In 1880, it officially became a trend when General James Garfield won the presidency by a scant 10,000 votes. He proceeded to piss off big business and the New York political machine, and less than 4 months into his term, on July 2nd, 1881, he was shot by an angry lawyer, Charles Guiteau. He died on September 19th, after months of tasty torture at the hands of quacks, which may have been some sort of Masonic ritual. It basically just gets spooky in 1900 when President William McKinley is reelected to his second term. He was standing in a receiving line at the Buffalo Pan American Exposition when an anarchist with an unpronounceable name that, on first inspection, looks like some kind of joke, Leon Czolgosz, possibly, C-Z-O-L-G-O-S-Z, shot him twice in the chest. You know, for anarchy. President McKinley had the decency to linger for a mere 8 days and died on September 14th, 1901. Again, medical incompetence played its role, giving him a touch of the gangrene before he died. Mr. Czolgosz's trial started a week later and lasted a day. He was executed less than 2 months after the act. Like a good Hasidian, he signed a confession and was unapologetic. By now, you may be noticing that all the presidents elected in a 0 year eventually died in office. And this trend continued in 1920, with Warren Harding, who was perhaps the worst president ever. The Federal Vampire and Zombie Agency indicates that he was bitten by a vampire planted by Al Capone. Officially, the return to normalcy candidate, embattled by multiple scandals, fled to Alaska and died of food poisoning on August 2, 1923. His wife died the next year on November 21, 1924. FDR, like Lincoln, survived his zero-year presidency, but finally stroked out on April 12, 1945, in his fourth term as president. In 1960, JFK was elected, and we all know who killed him on November 21st, 1963. Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980, and after just a few months in office was shot by a son of George Bush's friend. He died and was replaced by a CIA robot on March 30th, 1981. Which brings us to the much-contested 2000 election. Wasn't that exciting?
Actually, John Hinckley Sr. was supposed to meet Neil Bush, our current president's brother, the evening that Reagan was shot. But you get the picture. And yes, the 2000 election was exciting. A little more exciting because subsequent interviews with Reagan's surgeons have revealed that Reagan's heart was in fact stopped in order to remove an exploding round that didn't from his chest. So, technically, Reagan died, and we don't even need that CIA robot theory anymore. So the proof of the trend will be tested in the fate of George Bush, who may be part of a sub-trend within the curse. Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt, both wartime presidents, survived their zero-year terms, but died in the following April of 1865 and 1945, respectively. If this trend holds and Bush is reelected, then, well, let's just say I would rather not look at statues of his stupid face for the rest of my life. Oh, you think perhaps they don't know about it? Why do you think they picked the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln for the mission accomplished photo op? But yes, there is another scenario. They go ahead and let him win. And in the cruel month of April, possibly on Mrs. Ellis's birthday, ancient scales tip and vengeful ghosts take their sacrifice. What then? A Christian martyr to guide us on a new crusade. Who could fill the vacuum? Surely Cheney would die from media exposure within 6 weeks. Ample opportunity for a centrist, a war hero, a senator from Arizona. This scenario might explain McCain's return to the grassy fold lately. After all, McCain's idol is Teddy Roosevelt, who was elected by Tecumseh when President McKinley was assassinated. But the real game is trying to figure out which way Tecumseh will win.
Time will tell. Time will tell.
Joke about this if you can. Assassination.
Are you trying to organize or prevent one?
Prevent. They would have to take reprisals. Everybody would suffer.
They've heard. They are aware. And they don't need anyone's help.
They don't believe me.
Many times bitten, forever shy. But they are not shy. They love to listen.
Jamming.
Jamming? Domestic science?
You learn about jamming one of these days. It's the most important ways of fighting back.
All right, enlighten me now.
No, I tell lies, remember?
Call in any time you like.
But my safety is unimportant as long as my people are imprisoned.
Now, when you're queen, you will know that no ruler is truly safe or secure as long as her people are not free.
I'm here to deliver a warning.
A warning? What about?
A plot to kill you.
To what?
To kill you. Assassinate you.
Huh?
Assassinate you.
I don't believe it.
They should have told you there are some unhappy people here.
Yes, well, I have seen the list of malcontents. It might interest you to know that you happen to be top of the bill.
I'll do my best to live up to it.
Yeah, what, by saving my despicable life?
Not for your sake.
Oh. What then?
If they succeed in killing you, what action would your people take?
Oh, well, they would punish those responsible. What else would you expect them to do?
Punish everyone. A mass reprisal, a never-to-be-forgotten deterrent.
Oh, I see, yeah. Well, I still don't believe it. My observers would have told me that they do see and hear everything, you know.
They don't believe everything.
You're referring to jamming.
Jamming. What?
Yes, well, we know we expected something like this, that they'd try to get through to us through a dupe. Mm. So they chose you to lead us into believing their fantasies, eh? Well, did they tell you how they're going to go about it, or where, when? Would you find out for me? Because the laugh will do me an awful lot of good.
You may find out yourself, quite suddenly. In which case, you won't be laughing!
I call them dogs. And if they're lapping up their own vomit, the only way to stop them is with a lash.
But dogs only obey their own nature, so why shouldn't we forgive them?
Dogs can be taught many useful things, but not if we forgive them every time they obey their own nature.
I left orders that I was not to be disturbed.
I have to say, it won't wait.
I know what it is. Tomorrow, after I've handed over office, I'm to be assassinated.
Or assassinated. Substitute. Executed.
Since it's arranged by my own people, you mean?
You don't mind?
Of course I mind. It's just that, well, I never thought it would happen to me.
It never does. To anybody. But it can be prevented.
Preventing is only postponing. We never fail. Anyway, why should you care what happens to me?
I don't. but innocent people will be blamed. I know. I'm sorry, but there's nothing that I can do. I can think of better ways to die. And better causes to die for.
No, nothing can go wrong now. I'll stake my future on it. Well, thank you, sir. Yeah, I know you will.
The people who live here are doing their best under very hard circumstances.
If you say so, Grace. But, is their best really good enough?
That's what I want to use the power for, if you don't mind. I want to make this world a little better. If there's any town this world would be better without, this is it.
Yes, and so the great day is nearly over. It went off rather well, I thought. Better than planned. And now you can look forward to your own retirement, and I'm sure they'll arrange something equally suitable for you when the day comes.
Awful work! Where the hell is nothing falling? What the hell are you guys doing up there?
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. Sovereignty. You're you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And
too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love to women all across this country. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
But he's still the same person I met at a backyard barbecue in Midland, Texas, and married 3 months later.
And so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
So,
one way or the other, we'll find out in April, in just a couple short weeks. We want you to be informed and ready. We want you to have that crumple zone around your head. So that when all the panicking pinks are shrieking, don't laugh. That would be bad.
Yeah, you mean you got to keep your game face on.
Game face. Game face.
But I don't have much faith that, I hate using that word, but that he's going to...
Me neither, which is why I feel good about it. If Jodie Foster was the Copper Tone Girl, do you think that John Hinckley Jr. pictured himself as the dog? All right, then.
So, beware the Ides of March. You have another year to prepare to beware.
I'm all-knowing. I'm the man in the radio.
If you would like more information on the Church of the Subgenius, you could write to them at P.O. Box 181417, Cleveland Heights, Ohio, 44118-1417. Or visit them online
at
subgenius.com.
Baboozle and Nip-Nip-Diddly. Ides 2005 has been a reading from Philip K. Dick's Radio Free Albemuth, NSPS performing Rome, the Rome Lecture, Tom Waits performing In the Colosseum, a collage of old Ides banter, Caliper Coggins, the Batterudin stuff, a bit of Julius Caesar, and for what will be the final time one way or another, the new Tecumseh lecture. I promise. The Shining performed, "Hey, look at me, I'm a president." And then Ella and I put together Ass-Ass and Bushmash. And believe me, I'm as tired of talking about it as you are of hearing it, if not more.